Good morning, Early Birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio and our friends in the public media spectrum across the Yellowstone region, bringing you the latest news. I'm Carl Lengel, your host. It is the 14th of July, 2026, a Tuesday. A Montana state senator charged with official misconduct faces a jury trial starting today. Senator and former Senate President Jason Ellsworth is accused of trying to award $170,000 in government work to a friend and former business partner Bryce Eggleston. Following the contract's discovery in 2025, Ellsworth's peers elected to permanently ban him from the Senate floor. If found guilty of the criminal charge, the senator could face up to 6 months in jail and be permanently barred from public service. Over 100,000 people responded to a proposed overhaul of federal grazing regulations. The Bureau of Land Management oversees 155 million acres of public land also used to graze livestock. That includes about 8 million acres in Montana, most of which is rangeland. The agency's proposal includes changes, including defining production-oriented livestock and limiting public input. The agency says it is modernizing its policies. Opponents say the proposal weakens environmental protections and reduces transparency and accountability for the federal agency. Montana expects to receive $1.2 billion from a federal fund meant to maintain and improve health care access for rural Americans. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports the state has set up a new board that will decide how much money the state's rural hospitals get.
Montana health officials announced earlier this year how they wanted to spend their share of the $50 billion Rural Health Transformation Program Fund. Part of that plan concerned Frontier Hospital administrators. For those hospitals to get their share of funding, they would have to submit a plan to, quote, right-size the services they provided. Small hospitals worried the state wanted to pay them in exchange for eliminating care they view as essential to their community. The Center for Excellence Board will review funding applications from rural hospitals. The board includes administrators from 6 rural hospitals and 2 low-income health clinics, as well as healthcare providers. State health officials, lawmakers, health insurance companies, and larger hospitals will also sit on the board. Input from board members will be advisory. The state health department says it will, quote, retain final authority over all funding decisions. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Applications are underway to fill the many rural health care gaps in Wyoming. The state is allocating more than $200 million in federal Rural Health Transformation Act funding. Applications are open to critical access hospitals and emergency medical service providers trying to sustain basic services. Federally qualified health centers and tribally run clinics can also get funds to expand their reach. Other dollars could go toward creating medical residency programs and providing new technology to independent providers. Applications are open until August 3rd. The funds have to be awarded by October 30th and spent by the end of September next year. Applicants can renew funds for up to 5 years. More information is available on the Wyoming Department of Health's website. Officials in Yellowstone National Park are once again advising caution as male bison are in rutting season and can become more aggressive, as shown in a video of an elderly man being hoisted 8 feet in the air in an incident circulating on social media. Bozeman photographer Mike McLeod shot video of the incident and posted it on social media on Friday. The video shows the man, identified by media as Carl Isom McDaniel of Kendall, Washington, and his grandson taking pictures of the bison lying on the ground when the animal suddenly got up and charged the man. According to McLeod, the bison had been acting very aggressively prior to the attack. This is the second bison attack in 2 weeks in Yellowstone. A 12-year-old sustained injuries from a bison near Fishing Bridge in late June. Park officials report more people are injured by bison in Yellowstone than any other animal. They remind visitors bison are unpredictable and can run 3 times faster than humans. Wyoming's Education Department is deciding how to enact a new statewide literacy program, and it's seeking feedback from the public. New legislation mandates evidence-based practices for teaching children to read. It also requires schools to do regular screenings for dyslexia. The Wyoming Department of Education must put that legislation into action by writing the rules that will tell school districts how to follow the new law. The department has published a first draft of those rules and will accept public comments online through the end of August. And the show must go on. Montana Shakespeare in the Parks, on its annual summer tour, posted on Facebook that it's been an adventure, according to the Shakespeare Post. On its way to Powell, Wyoming, for a performance of Much Ado About Nothing Monday evening, truck pulling up the trailer broke down in the same exact spot as it did last year. This is again a repeat from last year. Montana Shakespeare is in a drive to replace the truck, which has been problematic in recent seasons. The show continues on to Cody for a performance tomorrow evening. The musician John Lennon was many things, a songwriter, an activist, and certainly not least a Beatle. To his former companion, music executive May Pang, he was complex. Their whirlwind 18-month relationship in the early 1970s, while he was separated from his wife Yoko Ono, became known to fans as The Lost Weekend. It's the title of a documentary recounting Pang's time with Lennon and a gallery of her photographs immortalizing their love. Pang is in Missoula this week on her gallery tour. Montana Public Radio's Austin Amestoy caught up with her at LA Design.
We're in LA Design here in Missoula, and there are these black framed pictures of John Lennon all over the walls here, most of them in black and white, and he seems to be kind of just relaxed in a lot of them. He's got those classic shades on in many of them, smoking cigarettes in others. They're very quiet and intimate, I would say.
Thanks. This is May.
Hi.
Lovely to meet you. I'm Austin.
Hi.
It's a pleasure. Welcome to our neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? Do you want to walk through the art first?
Yeah. Why don't we chat about some of the photos?
Okay.
All right. When you look at these photographs, do you remember yourself behind the camera in all of them, or are some of the memories stronger than others?
I do remember. I mean, you know, they just. Memories just flood back. Every time I look at some, I say, oh yeah, this is what was happening. And I just, all of a sudden, there's an offshoot to another memory, so it just keeps going.
Do you get tired of it? Do you get tired of talking about it, ever?
No. Never thought about it, you know? It just feels like it's an everyday thing. You know, it's like, would you get tired of talking about your mom and your dad and your, you know, your family or your best friend or your husband, wife, partners, you know? So it's just natural for me. So the things that people have heard, and I'd rather have them corrected on some of the information than not.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions that you've heard that have led you to be, because that's something you mentioned in the documentary as well, that you're very interested in making sure your side of the story is told. So what prompted that?
I think when you start seeing, yes, the idea the first time around that Yoko was the one who was pushing it, but you know, that she was sitting alone in the house, that's not exactly what happened. Yes, she did come and approach me to say, oh, you should go start seeing John, but it wasn't because I was even closely, I worked for him, for both of them, for 3 years prior. So that was not even in the cards in my head. So when she approached me, I kept saying, something else is up because I don't want to be part of this. But it was John who actually pursued me, not so much that Yoko was the one. In fact, Yoko kept saying, you don't want to go out with John? I said, no. And so this is why it was really that John was the one who said, okay, finally, he said, all right, if she's going to have this going and she wants me to go with May, I'm going to go for, because I asked him about that. And he said, it's because I finally, you know, he says, she was pushing.
It was real.
It was real. So I said, okay.
Here we are. You're touring John's photographs. And when you look up your Wikipedia page, it's very heavily about John.
Yeah.
How do you feel about your legacy being so intertwined with his? And how have you sort of like navigated that over the years?
I think I'm honored to have even been part of that. You know, just being someone in the music business. Who wouldn't want to be with, you know, somebody, if you read about anybody that's even touched the Beatles or any one of them, that's a big part of their life. And in my case, it was a big, big part of my life. And yes, I'm proud of it, because when I worked with John on a lot of the stuff, it was during, in his solo career, we did more work than he'd ever done any other time in his solo career. So a lot of people are surprised that I was there. And so...
And you see yourself as a crucial part of the art that he was able to put into the world.
Yeah. And, at first I didn't even look at it that way, but other people have. And they said, but you were there for this? I said, yes. And, and every time they say something, I said, oh, I was there. And, a lot of people had no idea that even in the last 5 years of his life, he was constantly calling me. Hmm. So we were in touch all the time until the time he died.
Do you miss him?
Oh, absolutely. Every day of my life, there's something about him. But I know in spirit that he's around somewhere, and he's watching over everyone. Because he was everything. He was everything rolled in one minute. He was naive. He was, he was too trusting sometimes. But he was also witty. He was clever. He was smart.
Do you feel that these photographs tell that story of his complexity?
I think it gives an idea of another side that no one's ever seen. Because my photos were not meant for the public, as it were, which they are now. But, people have asked me, why do you do it now? I said, because I don't want people to see the John that I knew, not the John that's manufactured. Like most of the photos that you see, he knew that even if it's in his home, you knew he was doing a photo session. This is not a photo session. This is home.
They're authentic.
Yeah.
Thanks, May.
Thank you.
So wonderful to meet you again.
That was Montana Public Radio's Austin Amostoy speaking with May Pang, John Lennon's former girlfriend. Pang's gallery is open to the public at LA Design in Missoula Tuesday and Thursday of this week from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. Internationally acclaimed wildlife photographer Tom Murphy has been busy. Murphy kicked off the summer with the debut of the U.S. Postal Service's American Bison, commemorating the official American mammal. Murphy is providing photos for a book Yellowstone National Park Bison manager Chris Jeremiah is writing, titled Yellowstone Bison, Return of the Last Wild Herd. The book is being published by Yellowstone Forever and is due out this month. In a lengthy interview with Murphy, he repeatedly returned to the preservation of the American wilderness, and particularly the American bison. He's hopeful that the stamp will move more than the mail.
The stamp is pretty popular.
It's a connection, I think, to this Pleistocene megafauna that intrigues a lot of people. They come to Yellowstone to see a bison, and because I think it's a touch, they can touch history and prehistory, and without getting too philosophical, but we came from wilderness, and this animal defines in many ways the survival of what was even bigger and more intriguing wilderness, like mammoth and mastodons and short-faced bears, dire wolves. They're all gone, but we have this one animal that's still here. And if we are more educated, create our own stories, our own personal stories, and recognize that that creature and all the other creatures that associated with that wild connection, we have those on the landscape, surviving, prospering, we have a better country.
What's ahead for you? You're always busy and doing something. What's up for the summer and the rest of the year?
This book on Yellowstone bison, Chris Jeremiah, who's the fellow in charge of managing the bison, he and I put this book together. It's going to be released the first part of July, hopefully all over the country. Smithsonian is going to carry it. And then the Buffalo Bill Center in Cody, Wyoming, they're opening a two-year show on bison on the 22nd of August. So I'm going to be there for that opening. They bought 2,000 copies of this bison book because they know it's going to be a popular event. And also to the Buffalo Bill is going to give me a one-year show at their main gallery opening in the end of January next year. And the topic will be the seasons of Yellowstone, which is kind of an easy thing for me to talk about because I think it's a 30,000 square foot gallery. I could probably fill up the whole museum on Yellowstone stuff. I love my time in Yellowstone and wandering all over the place and in all seasons too. My famous section is Yellowstone in the winter, originally driven by some photographs of bison covered with frost in the wintertime. And people are amazed to see these creatures surviving. When in Yellowstone Park, three seasons, why there's a huge diversity of creatures, like 300 and some bird species and whatever. But the wintertime is most intriguing to me because you have three choices to make it through the winter. You can leave, which a number of them do. They migrate out. They go down elevation. They go to Chile or something where it's warmer. Or they can go to sleep. They can hibernate. There's a lot of those do it. Bears and chipmunks and lots of other creatures. But the creatures that stay and survive in that cold. So that's kind of where I've become well known about that because my motivation is to understand, be as informed about these my subject as I can. In the wintertime, a big part of it is how do they endure winter? So I took it to an extreme. So I go sleep in the snowbanks in a little blue tarp to get a better sense of what their life is like in the winter. What's ahead for me is probably I'm going to carry my little blue tarp around and show it to a lot of people.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for your time today.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's The Worm for this Tuesday. Catch up with us tomorrow. We'll have another episode for you early birds then.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.